Well, hello again. This is David Wilcock, and we're now beginning the second disc in our series about the convergence, a convergence of matter, energy, and consciousness all coming together to coalesce into this moment of quantum change that we're now in today. Again, the music that you're hearing on this CD is the work of Larry Sire, who has won 9 Grammy Awards and is the author of 2 definitive collections of musical samples, one for the bass and one for the drums, both of which are available from the Tascam Corporation, highly recommended. I want you to be able to relax and enjoy yourself as you hear the information that I'm sharing. This CD is going to get into a little more technical detail than the first one did, but I'm also not going to beat you over the head with it. I do feel that it's important for you to have heard the first CD before you listen to this one. So if you're just now getting in and you haven't heard anything yet, I would recommend locating the first CD and listening to that first, because we are going to be building off of that concept. So let's say that you haven't listened to these back-to-back, but maybe you kind of took some time off between the first one and this one, and you want to have a little refresher course for what it was we were talking about before. Let's go ahead and do that, because I don't want you to feel lost. It's very important to me that you stay with me, because I think if you can understand where we're really going with this and what we're really saying, then there is a great potential for good. So I was talking about the work of Clive Baxter, who was involved since 1948 with polygraph machines or lie detector tests. And in fact, to this day, he remains one of the leading authorities in the world on administering lie detector tests. And it was on February 2nd, 1966, that he had decided to connect one of his houseplants to his lie detector machine, or the polygraph. What happened initially was he was only planning on trying to measure if there would be any change in the plant's responsiveness from him watering it. Maybe as the branches soaked up the water from the soil and brought it up, there would be some kind of change in the plant's responses. Now, what was he measuring? It's called GSR, or galvanic skin response. It basically has to do with how much electricity is conducting through the plant. So to his surprise, when he connected the plant to the lie detector, it wasn't just a flat line indicating a solid, steady current. There was a very real graph that looked alive, that looked like there was some kind of living consciousness in the plant. And what was really interesting was that when he thought of obtaining a match to burn one of the leaves on the plant, when he actually had the vision in his mind that he was going to go get a match and light the plant on fire, the plant freaked out on the graph. In the same way that if someone is lying and they're trying to look like they're not lying, their body can't hide it because the graph goes nuts. The plant did the same thing. And it went so highly that it was beyond the level of the machine to measure how much it had changed compared to a regular human being in this case. So he went on from there to incorporate all kinds of other levels of data with other types of life, including chicken eggs. He did it with bacteria, and he also did it with human cells. Again, Deepak Chopra quoted on Clive Baxter's book, Primary Perception, Biocommunication with Plants, Living Foods, and Human Cells, which is highly recommended and only came out in 2002, Deepak Chopra said, and I can quote this, "Clive Baxter's research has profound implications for humanity and its future evolution. Wisdom traditions have claimed there is only one ultimate reality, that differentiates into all forms and phenomena. This ultimate reality is the root and ground of being, the source of all that exists in the universe. A realm of existence where we are not only connected to each other, but where we are inseparably one. Clive Baxter's discoveries have created the new scientific paradigm. The understanding of the paradigm is crucial if we are to heal ourselves and our planet. I'm personally grateful and indebted to Clive for leading the way. Someday all of humanity will acknowledge their gratitude to this great pioneer. And we talked a little bit on the last CD about how if you want to replicate Baxter's results, there are all sorts of factors that need to be included, because the plants will acclimate to you if you begin watering them and showing them love and appreciation. They're not going to just act the same way. So science usually tries to replicate experiments over and over again under a controlled laboratory setting. But when you start dealing with consciousness science, the typical method derived all the way back from Descartes and Aristotle, dealing with how you construct a scientific protocol, needs new levels of protocol included for consciousness. Because what we're learning is that the person running the experiment can have a very strong impact on what actually happens in the experiment. It's not as simple as it used to be, where you can just have different laboratories in different places, and if you mix chemical X with chemical Y, you get reaction Z. It's not that simple. In this kind of case, if you mix chemical X with chemical Y and you're angry, you're going to get a different Z than you would if you're happy. So a lot of people don't understand that. This is a new way to look at science, because we're dealing with an energy source that is more basic, more fundamental than electromagnetic energy. And even more importantly, it's very responsive to consciousness. So again, the purpose of this CD is to talk about a change in the overall evolution of humanity. We're going to be suggesting that in the whole world, there is a change happening, an energetic change that is similar to previous periods of sudden, spontaneous evolution in the past. And that's going to be one of the main points that we'll be making on this disc. So one of the things that I was telling you before deals with the fact that Baxter was able to take cells out of a person's mouth using a cotton swab and run them through an autoclave so that the white blood cells were separated out, the leukocytes as they're called. And then he took those leukocytes and he put them into a tiny 1 milliliter test tube and put little gold wires down in the test tube, and the gold wires connected to the polygraph. So all he's really doing is measuring how much electricity those cells are conducting. But that's your typical galvanic skin response, as I said, which is one of the basic systems that they're monitoring when they're doing lie detector tests. They're also doing blood pressure, respiratory rate, heart rate, etc. So what Baxter discovered was that you could take somebody's white blood cells, put them inside a test tube, hook it up to a lie detector, and even if the person was 300 miles away, if they kept a careful record of anything that happened to them that caused them to feel shock, discomfort, any type of unpleasant emotion, the same exact results would show up in the cells at exactly the same time. This laboratory associate of his was trying to go through a series of basic stresses that you have to do if you're going to take a flight with an airplane, involving missing a turn and having to figure out how to get back to that point again. That's going to cause some stress. Having trouble with the ticket-taking people when he gets to the airport, things like that, causing stress. And he documented carefully every time that he felt a sudden surge of anger or frustration. Sure enough, every single thing that he wrote down for frustration, anger, stress, showed up exactly on his cells, even though they were 300 miles away. And of course, we don't know exactly how much farther that could go, because Baxter hasn't measured it any farther than that yet, but we know that it could potentially be the whole entire world. So then that leads us up to the results that are coming from what's now being called the Invincible Defense Technology, or what is also being called the Maharishi Effect. As many of you know, the practice of transcendental meditation is still alive and well, and it had a definite crescendo of interest, people becoming more focused on it in the 1970s. So it was during this time that many people began embracing this style of meditation as a means of finding a quiet point within themselves that they could then expand upon and allow that sense of inner peace to grow more and more and more. That truth is one that doesn't just affect you. When you go into a meditative state, it affects other people around you. You have an effect on other people's consciousness. Consciousness is a unified phenomenon. These waves that we're talking about can't just mean that there's only a holographic connection between you and your own cells. It seems a lot more likely, if you can set off your cells and they're 300 miles away, that you're setting off a beacon when you feel stress that's uniquely configured to your own energy that can be read at least 300 miles around you in any direction. So it just so happens if you have living cells that are part of your body that haven't died yet, 300 miles away, then you're going to be able to send a signal and the cells will pick it up. So what happens when you go into a state of transcendental meditation and you try to attain peace in yourself? And let's take that a step further. What happens when you try to attain that state of inner peace with a large group of people, and you get a whole bunch of people together all in one room at the same time, and they're all trying to do this, they're all trying to foster that peace in their hearts? Well, the answer came about from this study that I read you in detail last time, and I'm not going to read the whole thing again. I'm just going to read you one part. A day-by-day study of a two-month assembly of people in Israel, people that were doing the transcendental meditation all together, in 1983, showed that on days when the number of participants in the Invincible Defense Technology was high, war deaths in the neighboring country of Lebanon dropped by 76%. So that means here they are in Israel, right? War-torn country. Country that a lot of people have been fighting over. Lebanon's right next door. The year is 1983. There's a war going on in Lebanon in 1983. When they had a large number of people show up to do the group meditation that day, on average, the war deaths would decrease by 76%. They were able to rule out other possible causes, including weekends, holidays, and weather. And as they said here, they were statistically controlled for. So this came out in the Journal of Conflict Resolution. So over a two-year period after 1983, during the time the Lebanon War was coming to a peak, the results were subsequently replicated in seven consecutive experiments. The results of these interventions included the following. War-related fatalities, people dying in war, decreased by 71%. War-related injuries fell by 68%. The level of conflict dropped by 48%, and cooperation among antagonists increased by 66%. The likelihood that these combined results were due to chance is less than 1 part in 10 to the 19th power. That means 10 with 19 zeros after it, which is a phenomenal number, making this effect of reducing societal stress in society, and conflict, the most rigorously established phenomenon in the history of the social sciences. And then it goes on from there Three assemblies taken together through an analysis of data combined by the RAND Corporation revealed a 72% reduction in worldwide terrorism. This was a group where you have at least 7,000 people gathering together in one place to try to create a global influence on peace. The study ruled out the possibility that this reduction in terrorism was due to cycles, trends, or drifts in the measurements used, or to changes in the season. They did it in Washington, D.C. as well. This was from June 7th to July 30th, 1993. In this study, they had an increase in the group from 800 to 4,000 people. Though violent crime had been steadily increasing during the first 5 months of 1993, soon after the study began, violent crime measured by FBI uniform crime statistics began decreasing and continued dropping until the end of the experiment. Maximum decrease in crime was 23.6%. And guess what? As soon as they cut off the flow, as soon as they stopped these groups of people from meditating, which were between 800 and 4,000 people, it began rising again. So they had hit a 23.6% decrease in crime in Washington, D.C. when the group got up to about 4,000. The likelihood that this result could be attributed to chance variation in levels of crime was less than 2 parts per billion. Think about that. The drop in crime could not be attributed to other possible causes, including temperature, precipitation, weekends, and police and community anti-crime activities. This was published in 1999 in the Social Indicators Research Journal. Again, the study was done in 1993. Then they also say as follows, 160 different U.S. cities where studies were conducted in found that increases in the numbers of people participating in this meditative practice over a 7-year period between 72 and 78 were followed by reductions in the rate of crime. Again, the study used data from the FBI Uniform Crime Index and controlled for other variables known to affect crime. This was also done in Manila, New Delhi, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C., and in every case, there were statistically significant declines in violent crime. Alternative explanations were explored and could not account for the findings. This was in Journal of Mind and Behavior, Volume 8, pages 67 to 104, 1987. So think about the fact that you live in a society where, again, war and crime and terrorism is a major concern. And isn't it pretty interesting that when you get 7,000 people together who are trained meditators, that you can decrease worldwide terrorism by 72%? That's 3 out of 4 incidents of terrorism decreased, eliminated. Gone. 72% decrease in worldwide terrorism. Now you have to ask yourself, why are we still thinking in the old way that you can bomb terrorists or people who might be harboring terrorists and cause a decrease in crime and a decrease in terrorism? In fact, if you cause hurt to somebody else, that only makes them afraid, and in fear, what are they going to do? They're going to be more likely to become terrorists themselves. So the whole idea that war is going to solve our problems is being scientifically challenged by very hard data that shows that just 7,000 people working towards coherent consciousness, towards a coherent meditative state, can bring down worldwide crime by 72%. Worldwide terrorism. Guess how much it would cost to get 7,000 people who are trained in this to be able to do this all the time. Basically pay for their food, pay for their lodging, and just keep a rotating group of 7,000 people together in one place somewhere in the world to be able to work on this crime. Maybe, at the most, $50,000 per person times 70,000 people. That might sound like a lot of money, but when you compare it to the average defense budget, we're probably talking well under $1 billion to be able to do this every year, which is money that can be easily thrown in to war without a second glance. In fact, I believe I just saw on the news the other day that George W. Bush was asking for an additional $80 billion to fight the war in Iraq. Well, this is definitely under $1 billion a year. But has war in and of itself ever gotten a result of 72% reduction in overall crime throughout the whole world? Do you realize what this means? Think about it from a real deep level. We're talking about the fact that every human being on the planet is being uniformly affected by the consciousness of those 7,000 people. Somehow, they are bringing in and anchoring in a higher energy that affects everyone. Because if you're hanging out somewhere in a third world country, and I won't pick a particular country because somebody will feel upset by that, but a given third world country where there is a likelihood of terrorism, and you're living there, a 72% reduction in worldwide terrorism means that every single person is being affected by this energy. It doesn't matter if you're angry. It doesn't matter if you're a wife beater. It doesn't matter if you're a psychopathic killer. It doesn't matter who you are. This energy affects everyone the same way. And that is a phenomenal statistic. So I want to suggest the possibility that what's happening here is that your conscious mind is more than just your own thoughts. Duh, right? Think about it. It can't just be your own thoughts. If it was only your thoughts, then how could this happen? If 72% of worldwide crime and terrorism is reduced when 7,000 people meditate, does that mean that the thoughts that you have in your mind are uniquely your own? Because if you're criminally minded and you think that you're the one that's making all the decisions, you're the one that's making all the choices for whether you're going to commit a crime or not, doesn't this kind of throw some hot water on that notion? Or wet blanket, to use another cliche. Doesn't it kind of suggest that there's more going on than just your own consciousness, your own thought? Doesn't it suggest that whether we're aware of it or not, we are tapped into each other on the mental level in much the same way that your cells will pick up on your thoughts and emotions? Especially the violent ones, even if you're 300 miles away or more. So let's start talking a little more about DNA and how this might actually be happening. There is evidence that DNA acts like an antenna for this energy of consciousness. And you remember from the last tape I was saying that the energy of consciousness, the Russians call torsion fields or torsion waves. Torsion means spinning or twisting. So these waves spiral as they move through space. They travel in a spiraling fashion, and I'm not going to beat you over the head with all the physics to prove that, but it is there. So we have a spiraling wave of consciousness, a wave that actually travels far faster than the speed of light, believe it or not. And there's experiments that show that very clearly. The Russians are so far ahead of what we've done in the West on this that it is literally mind-boggling. And a CD like this is really not the right place to try to give you all those facts, but if you want them, you can consult my written materials on my website, ascension2000.com and divinecosmos.com. And you have to spell it D-I-V-I-N-E. A lot of people spell it D-E-V-I-N-E. That's not how you spell it. So when we look at this information, what we see is that Dr. Vladimir Poponin and Dr. Peter Garyev worked together to do an experiment where they took DNA and put it inside a tube that was shielded off from all conventional forms of light. However, in the so-called vacuum, in empty space, there are always a certain amount of little bursts of light that show up from the ether, for lack of a better term, this notion of an energy source that exists everywhere. They're called virtual photons. As you may know, a photon is a little packet of light that travels along. Virtual photons literally mean that if you're in an area that's totally dark, there's going to be a small amount of pinpricks of light that show up and then disappear. Kind of like fireflies in the middle of a nice marshside area late at night in the right season when you can see them. If you've ever seen that, it's quite astonishing and beautiful. Thousands of points of twinkling light dancing around in the sky. Now imagine that light inside the tube. And it twinkles, and it's there in all the different places, winking on and off. And then imagine that you're taking DNA and putting it inside the tube. And as you know, DNA has a spiraling configuration. It's a spiral. What do you think happens to all those twinkling little fireflies when you put the DNA inside the tube? The answer is that the DNA gathers up all those fireflies, all those twinkling points of light, and all of them begin spiraling through the DNA. The DNA acts as an antenna for this energy. All the energy gathers up inside the DNA. If you can follow me into this next part of the story, you're going to be even more impressed, because what do you think happened? Or let's start this way. What do you think should happen when you take the DNA out? The fireflies should go back to their little dance flying around the tube, right? Wrong. What happens is, when you take the DNA out of the tube, the light continues to travel in a spiraling configuration for up to 30 days. Not 30 minutes, 30 hours, 30 days. So what does that tell us? On a very basic level, it means that the DNA is not just a molecule. It's not just something physical. It is an energy. There is an energy displacement caused by the DNA. When I say displacement, I mean if the DNA exists somewhere, it's creating a vortex. A vortex in this ether, a vortex in this energy that our scientists used to acknowledge throughout all the 1700s, 1800s, right on up to the early 20th century. And then all of a sudden, along comes the new quantum physics theories and the theories of Einstein, and then it all got blown out of the water. But originally, everybody accepted this because it also comes from an ancient teaching. The Greeks talked about the ether. It was their word for shine, indicating that the energy has a shining or a light quality. It is light. It's light energy. The true nature of what light really is. So what does that mean? If you take the DNA out of the tube and it keeps on flowing in a spiraling configuration, gathering up all the light for 30 days after the DNA is gone, what's going on here? How does that relate to the notion that if you have your cells 300 miles away from your body, they're still going to pick up on you? How does that relate to the notion that if you have 7,000 people meditating reliably in any one spot in the world, in this case using the Transcendental Meditation Technique, that you get a 72% reduction in worldwide terrorism and violent crime? Think about it for a second. DNA in the tube captures the light, holds it for 30 days, even if the DNA isn't there. How does that relate to Baxter's experiments with his plants and their responding to shock? How does that relate to your cells picking up on this energy? It suggests that there is a unified field of consciousness. Not just a unified field of electromagnetic energy and gravity and all the things that scientists are looking for, but a true unified field, a field that has all the different aspects of consciousness included, as well as matter and energy, all the things that scientists expect to see. And isn't this the theory that all the physicists have been searching for anyway? Aren't we saying that the holy grail of science is when we're going to find a way to tie all this stuff together? That's what we're saying. And this again ties in with you as a soul. Because if you can start to understand that your consciousness is not just your own mind, but is a conglomeration of the minds of those around you, then you might begin to realize that if there's a lot of poverty and hardship on this planet, it's going to affect you. You can't ignore it. You can't deny it. If you happen to be living in an affluent Western country as you're listening to this CD, you might have a lot more comforts in life than most of the other people on this planet, because let's face it, the average person on this planet doesn't have enough food, doesn't have enough drinkable water, doesn't have a stable society that's free from crime and danger, and doesn't have comfortable shelter to sleep the night in. That is the truth. So there's more of that than there is of people living in relative ease and comfort and happiness. Yet, because the people who live in comfort and happiness have television, their media keeps telling them that this is normal, that this is the normal thing in the world. It's not the normal thing in the world. The normal condition in the world is not a happy condition. So that's why your mind can so easily lapse into a state of disappointment and unhappiness. Baxter's research definitely shows that when you have a negative event happen, it broadcasts. So that works on the collective level as well. The Maharishi effect, or the invincible defense technology, shows the positive side, but the negative side is that when a bunch of people all feel fear at the same time, it has its effect. Now, another study that is referenced in my book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, which I co-authored with Win Free, brings about a study that was done where random number generators were being used to study the overall level of human consciousness at any one time. How were people feeling at any one time? It may come as a surprise to you that during September 11th, when those events were happening, planes hitting the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and the people going into a state of mass panic, that this mechanism also showed a substantial change. Random number generators all over the world showed a sudden increase. So what does that really mean? They're using an electromagnetic process, which is supposedly balanced, so that the numbers that are coming out are random. But if there is a disruption in electromagnetic energy, if the basic energy around us gets disrupted, then these random number generators are going to get less random, because there's going to be changes in the signal, and as the signal changes, the numbers become more likely to repeat. So what he found in this study was that the closer you got to New York City, the more non-random the number generators got. And even more interestingly, it began happening before the event actually started. It's almost as if a future negative event casts its shadow into the past. So, it works both ways. And there's a lot more reading you can do on that subject if you want to. It's out there. You can take this consciousness and put it to good use, or you can take it and put it to negative use. I find it also interesting, based on this consciousness science that we're talking about, that the giant earthquake and tsunami in Indonesia, the Sumatra quake, happened on December 26th, the day after Christmas. You might say, well, why would you call attention to that? Christmas is a holiday. It's a happy day. Not necessarily, because I have training in suicide crisis hotline as a background. And one of the things that we learned in that training is that the Christmas holiday is the highest time for suicide rates worldwide of the entire year. Families are coming together. People are coming together who never normally see each other. And there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of buried pain. People didn't have a happy childhood. It all comes out in the open. You got the relatives and the in-laws, and they're all talking to each other, and there's tension around the family table, and it gets more and more intense in the build-up to Christmas until it actually happens. So, isn't it interesting that this massive earthquake happens that causes this loss of life right around that time? So now you're probably saying to yourself, okay, I was with you when you were talking about consciousness being exchanged between people. But now you're saying that earthquakes and consciousness are related? That's a little bit too hard to accept. But the data is there. And the data is there in many, many ways. There is an ongoing ancient teaching from many different traditions that says that the level of spiritual integration of the people in a given area will determine the health or the dis-ease of the climate in that area. And the way that we can really make this point clear is by bringing in a new level of research that's going to help to refine and combine all the different things that we've been talking about so far. And that is the studies from Russia of the pyramids. So what is that? What is the Russian pyramid studies? Dr. John DeSalvo of the Giza Pyramid Research Association has a website in which he has published a wide variety of pyramid studies. The website is www.gizapyramid.com. And he was contacted by a group of people who had done scientific, reputable studies using large pyramids in the former Soviet Union. An interesting thing happened. When the Soviet Union collapsed around 1990-91, that period of time, you had an entire military-industrial complex that was dedicated to national defense and to all the scientific processes that need to happen to stay competitive. You have all these people now who are living on $30 a month, doing whatever they can do, but their laboratories are still sitting there. They still have the equipment. They still have the brain and the desire to go to the next level. I told you before about Dr. Nikolai Kozarev and some of the things that he discovered as a result of being in the concentration camp, that he was the pioneer of these pieces of information. And without going into a whole lot of detail, I'll start with him because then that gives you the context for why these Russians would have done pyramid research to begin with. As I said, Kozarev had suffered through Stalin's concentration camp for a period of approximately 11 years, and he noticed that bacteria would preferentially grow in a spiraling shape, meaning that there was no bacteria in between the arms of the spiral. And hence, because the bacteria only grew in a spiral, in the arms of the spiral, and not outside the spiral, the fields have come to be known as torsion fields, the word torsion meaning spiraling. I find this very fascinating because Dr. Kozarev came out of the concentration camp and was able to do a series of experiments that show an energy source that is measurable and detectable, but not electromagnetic energy. In other words, he was able to build special detecting devices that would move in the presence of these torsion fields. So I'm going to read you some of the things that would cause torsion fields to be formed. You could get them by deforming a physical object. You could get them by blowing an air jet onto an object. You could get them by turning over an hourglass filled with sand. You could get them if light was being absorbed by physical matter. You could get them by causing friction. You could get them by burning something. You could get them by heating and cooling an object. You could get them from phase transitions if you turn ice into water or water into vapor, etc. You could get them by dissolving and mixing substances. Now, so far, all these things sound pretty standard if you take into the idea that there is this ether, that there is a living energy around us that behaves kind of like a fluid. And that means that what he's doing, all these things, deforming a physical object, shooting air at an object, turning over an hourglass, absorbing light, friction, burning, heating or cooling an object, phase transitions in a substance, all these things are causing ripples if there is a water around us, a water of spirit. Ripples in the ether, and those ripples communicate through the ether and then are picked up by one of his detecting devices. But I deliberately didn't read you all of the things that he found would cause torsion fields. The other things that I didn't read so far include the actions of the person observing the experiment, including simply moving their head. You can simply move your head and create a torsion field. You can create a torsion field by having a plant die. As the plant dies, it seems to be giving off an energy that can be measured. You can measure torsion fields by pointing a telescope at a star and putting a big black plate over the front of the telescope, but picking up the energy through the telescope anyway. In other words, you can shield off your telescope from all visible light and all visible electromagnetic energy, point your telescope at a star, and pick up a signal of energy from that star that goes right through the metal. And what's even more interesting is that it doesn't go from the visible position of the star in the night sky, it goes from the real position of the star. A star that you see in the sky might be millions of years old, the light that you see, because light travels slowly. So when you're seeing the light from the star, it's a lot older than where the star is now, because the light took millions of years to get to you, traveling slowly through space. In the meantime, of course, the star may have traveled what would look to you to be like one or two diameters of the moon farther over to where it now is in the sky. So what Kozarev discovered time and time again is that the energy field that he picked up off the stars was not from the visible position, but from the real position. And even more interestingly, there was a decreasing gradient of this energy that he could pick up in either direction, the future and the past. So you have the real position of the star where it is now, you have the past position where the star was, which is what we see with our eyes, and you have the future position where the star is going to go. The strongest energy that we pick up from the star, right through the metal plate on the telescope, so the telescope doesn't see anything. You have to aim it with the viewfinder, the little scope on top is smaller. What we see is the strongest energy from the star in its real position. You get less energy as you go back into the past, and you get less energy as you go forward into the future. And the most interesting one that he found of all was sudden changes in human consciousness, especially those infused with strong emotion. So then you're asking, okay, what were some of the ways that he could measure these fields and notice that they were happening? He had built special mechanical detectors, which take a lot of time to explain. We're not going to try to do that here, but they are in my books. But I'm going to tell you some of the non-mechanical ways that he found that would actually show these torsion field changes. And of course, if you really want to replicate these studies, you have to read more detail and get into the protocol of how he did it, because you can't simply set this up and expect it's going to work if it's a consciousness effect going on as well. Some of the things that would change with torsion field activity include the conductiveness of an electronic resistor, especially those made from tungsten metal. That's number one. Well, do you know what the average filament in a light bulb is made out of? Tungsten. Have you heard of people who are psychic and get angry and they blow light bulbs? It's happened to me too. Another thing that causes it is the level of mercury in a thermometer. If you shield off the thermometer from any normal temperature change, meaning that you keep it in a nice environment where the temperature is not going to be varying, and then you aim torsion fields at it, you suddenly see the mercury level in the thermometer change very noticeably. The vibrational frequency of an oscillating quartz crystal, which is what we use in our clocks, in our watches, etc. That also can change in the presence of these fields. The electric potential of a thermocouple. The thickness or viscosity of water. Water actually has noticeable changes around torsion fields. You can create these torsion fields by something as simple as moving an object through space. You can also measure it with things like the reaction rates of chemicals as they're reacting with each other. You blend two chemicals together. A very simple one, of course, would be baking soda and vinegar, which causes all those fizzy bubbles to form. And also, most interestingly, the growth parameters of bacteria and plants. In the presence of these energy fields, plants and bacteria will grow much more robustly, and you'll see a noticeable change. So there's a lot more I could tell you about Kozarev, but suffice it to say that his work triggered off over 5,000 different scientific papers, which continue to be published to this day. And if you want to learn more about that science, the third volume of Convergence, entitled Divine Cosmos, has a lot more information for you. The important part here is that the Russians inherited this knowledge and carried this knowledge with them, and then when they had the falling down of their normal social structure, the collapse of the Soviet Union, 1990 to 1991, all these scientists had the same laboratories, the same experimentation, but they didn't need to do anything for the government anymore. They were living off of other means of earning an income. And in some cases, they still were funded, but they had more time because they had less to do. So much of this research comes out of the republics of Russia and the Ukraine. One big player is Dr. Golod. Another big player is Dr. Krasnoholovets. And there were two pyramids that were built in Russia near Moscow. One was 22 meters tall, and another was 44 meters tall, or 144 feet. So that gives you some idea. These are big pyramids. They cost over $1 million to build, and most importantly, their slope angle was steep. They're very steep, almost like an obelisk, 70-degree angle. So that, what does the 70-degree angle mean? It means that the typical Great Pyramid that we see in Egypt has about a 51-degree angle. If you measure the angle between the side of the pyramid and a straight line going up, that's the angle that we're talking about. So when you get a 70-degree angle, you get a real steep pyramid. So since the early 1990s, they've built a total of 17 different pyramids at the time that this was written. And they found out that if there was metal in the pyramid, it wouldn't work. They wouldn't get any effects. The pyramids were aligned to the North Star and were built away from populated areas, and they used modular fiberglass plastic to build them. The base of the 22-meter pyramid had a 36-centimeter thick wall, and the base of the 44-meter pyramid had a 70-centimeter thick wall of fiberglass. So you got to build a lot of fiberglass into these, but again, they're not that expensive, and the results that they had were tremendous. The pyramid would have a little door on the front, but all it is a shell. That's important. They didn't fill up anything inside. They just built the shell, and it stands there like a giant room, like a giant steeple, if you will, and you can walk through the door and go inside. So then what they started to do is to go inside and put things in the pyramid and see what would happen, see if they could get any experimental results coming out of this. This pyramid research is really fascinating because eventually what we're going to see as I read you this is how it connects through the different aspects of consciousness and earth changes. So let's take some examples. Professor S.M. Klimenko and D.N. Nosik from the Ivanovsky R&D Institute of Virology within the Russian Academy of Medical Science. Now again, we're talking mainstream science. Conducted a study involving a drug known as venoglobulin, which naturally occurs in human beings as a compound that we have to fight viruses. When they diluted this drug into a concentration of 50 micrograms per milliliter and stored that in the pyramid for a period of time, it became approximately 3 times or 3,000% more effective at killing viruses. Think about that. Natural virus-fighting compound in the human body, put it inside the pyramid, becomes 3,000% better at killing off viruses. Professor A.G. Antonov and others from the Russian R&D Institute of Pediatrics, Obstetrics, and Gynecology tested the effects of a solution of 40% glucose in distilled water after it had been stored in the pyramid. By taking only 1 milliliter of this glucose and feeding it to 20 different premature babies who had compromised immune systems, basically babies who were sick and had been born too early. By just giving them this solution of glucose and water that they'd put inside the pyramid, the babies' levels of health were seen to rapidly increase up to a practically normal value. Saved these babies' lives. The researchers furthermore discovered that they could get the same effect by just using 1 milliliter of ordinary water in the pyramid. So we have a virus-fighting compound called venoglobulin, and it becomes 3,000% better at fighting viruses. We give premature babies who are dying a little tiny bit, 1 milliliter, which is nothing, of water from the pyramid, and they practically increase to normal health. Let's read some more. Living organisms were tested directly inside the pyramid by Dr. N.B. Egorova, at the Mekhanov R&D Institute within the Russian Academy of Medical Science. They took an experimental and a control group of white underbred mice weighing 12 to 14 grams. So what do we mean by experimental and control? It means one group of mice was put in the pyramid, one group was kept outside the pyramid. Okay, that's all the difference was. Both of these experimental and control groups were tainted with a strain of typhoid fever virus, specifically strain 415. Over the course of 1 day in equal amounts. So then all we're looking at is you give these mice a lethal virus, basically, and some of them are experiencing this in the pyramid and some of them are experiencing this out of the pyramid. At a smaller level of virus contamination, the mice who were in the pyramid would survive at a rate of 60%, whereas if you give the same mice in a control group, the only difference is they're not in the pyramid. You give them the same virus, the same amount, the same time throughout the day. Only 7% survived. So that's literally a 53% increase in survival. If you give the mice a really, really large dose, which is almost certainly lethal, 30% of the mice in the pyramid will still make it, even though only 3% will in the control group. In other experiments that Egorova and his associates did, mice were exposed to various cancer-causing agents, and an experimental group drank water from the pyramid, whereas a control group just drank ordinary water. The mice who drank the water from the pyramid had significantly fewer tumors develop than the mice who drank ordinary water. So this is starting to show you some of the fascinating stuff that comes out of this research. Let's read a few other examples, because as we start to see, it goes beyond just the level of health. With Dr. Alexander Gola, the joint stock company Scientific and Technological Institute of Transcription, Translation, and Replication, or TTR, in Kharkiv, Ukraine, conducted studies of the air above the pyramids that had been built with a Russian instrument similar to radar known as a military locator. They discovered a column of so-called unknown energy, which was 500 meters wide and 2,000 meters tall. This is enormous. Further studies confirmed that a larger circle of this energy surrounded the area above the pyramid that was 300 kilometers wide. So we're talking a very large change. Golod's team calculated that if such an energy column were to be produced with electromagnetic energy, it would require all the energy of the various power plants in Russia combined. Furthermore, they observed that after the pyramid's presence was established, an ozone hole that existed over that area of Russia was seen to repair itself in only 2 months' time. A series of pyramids was built over one of a number of oil wells. It was discovered that the viscosity of the oil under the pyramids decreased by 30%, which caused an increase in the amount of production by 30% compared to the other wells nearby. There was also a decrease in the amount of unwanted material in the oil, including gums, pyrobitumen, and paraffin. And these results were confirmed by the Gubkin Moscow Academy of Oil and Gas. So think about that, okay? Let's just pause for a moment. We're seeing that there is something going on with the energy field that the pyramids are harnessing, torsion fields, basically, that have a direct effect on health. We're seeing venoglobulin becoming 3,000% more effective at fighting viruses. We're seeing that by giving babies who are born prematurely and about to die, giving them 1 milliliter of water coming out of the pyramid, that their health practically increases to a normal value. We're seeing mice given typhoid fever, where if only 7% of them would normally survive, 60% survive inside the pyramid, and if only 3% of them would normally survive, because they're given even a higher dosage, you still get 30% of them in the pyramid that make it. And even cancer, which is considered a horrible menace that is basically uncurable. You just either do chemotherapy or what, but there's no real answer to get rid of it. You just give the mice the pyramid water while you're giving them carcinogens, and those mice develop significantly fewer tumors than the mice who drank the ordinary water. Then again, we see a column of energy rising out of the pyramid, which initially, the narrower one, is 500 meters wide and 2,000 meters tall, and the bigger one is 300 kilometers wide, which is enormous. And they found that in order to do this with electromagnetic energy, you'd have to use all the power plants in Russia combined. That's an enormous amount of energy. So what's going on here? Where is it coming from? It's coming from the Earth. The Earth itself absorbs and radiates etheric energy. And my definition, scientifically, of a torsion field is just a movement of energy, a movement of this etheric energy. Etheric energy in motion moves like a fluid. The energy behaves like water. And as it moves along, it generates a signal that you can pick up with consciousness, a signal that interfaces with DNA, right? Now let's start thinking about the things that we were talking about at the beginning of this second CD in the series. Think about the DNA inside the tube. What do we know about the DNA inside the tube? Do you remember? The DNA takes all the light that normally would look like little fireflies winking around inside the tube and causes all that light to spiral through the molecule, causing a change in the light. All the light gathered up by the DNA. And then when you take the DNA out of the tube, for up to 30 days afterwards, the light continues spiraling along by itself. You see, there's an energy there that's holding the light in place. That's an energy of torsion fields. Now, I want to bring in a study from Dr. Glenn Ryan, who I've had the pleasure to meet, and I've actually videotaped him talking, and hopefully we'll have that in a DVD series in the future. Dr. Glenn Ryan discovered that DNA contracts when you're feeling anger and expands when you're feeling love. The way he did this was by taking undifferentiated cells out of a human placenta, which basically the same as stem cells for the most part. And he took these cells and put them into a little vial and then had people who were trained in creating certain emotional states in themselves. They could either get really angry or they could feel a lot of love. But the main important part was that when they got angry, they were truly angry. They had their adrenaline glands fire off, their body would shake, their face would turn red. The real deal. And when they feel love, it's the kind of love that you would normally only feel in a peak sexual experience, or perhaps the love that you would feel when you are holding a newborn baby, your own baby. They are able to create that in the laboratory in controlled conditions. So when they held the test tube filled with the DNA and they get angry, the DNA got all knotted up when you looked at it under the microscope through special detecting devices that allowed you to see what the DNA was like. The DNA actually knots up like a braid of hair, gets tighter and tighter, more and more twisted. Whereas, when you feel peace and love, the DNA naturally unwinds. Okay, so what does that really tell us? It tells us that the higher love is a higher vibration, if you will, and it causes healing to occur. Because when DNA unwinds, when DNA unfolds, the messenger RNA can attach itself to the DNA and then take that code for healing and distribute it throughout the human body. So the DNA has to unroll and unwind like this in order to be able to heal you. If your DNA is all knotted up, then you're not able to heal your body because you're closing off the access to all the coded information that will tell the body how to heal itself. Are you with me so far? So what this means is that the healing energy of 7,000 people meditating is unwinding DNA around the whole planet. Your DNA is unwinding, your body is able to heal itself, and there's also a feeling of consciousness change, consciousness relief. Okay? Now, some of the other experiments that the pyramids came up with in these Russian studies will start to show the connection between consciousness and life and earth changes. Because remember, I was saying to you the suggestion, the Sumatra earthquake happened the day after Christmas, which is historically correlated with the highest suicide rate for the year. So a lot of light workers, as people call themselves, a lot of people who meditate for world peace, were probably offline and weren't doing their normal job because they got overwhelmed by the holidays, which is very easy to happen. So for all the time that you've been spending, if you have been spending time, trying to stay peaceful, trying to do your job for the planet, and wondering if it's had any effect, if you've actually been doing any good, I want you to think about the fact that when people's defenses were down, there was a sudden earthquake. I want you to also think about the fact that if the Earth is generating torsion fields, naturally, that they're radiating out from the Earth all the time, because torsion fields are generated when matter is created. Matter itself draws off of etheric energy. It sucks it in, and it blows it out at the same time. Both things are happening at the same time. Gravity is actually just the balance between the energy that the Earth is sucking in and the energy that the Earth is blowing out. The energy sucking in is more powerful, it's stronger. The energy blowing out is weaker by a little bit. And the summary between what's pushing down and what's pushing back up from the Earth is gravity. The pushing down force is higher than the pushing up force. The gravity is higher than the so-called levity force. So that's why we go down and we don't levitate. But there are ways to overcome gravity, and that will be for another time. Anyway, the point is the Earth is generating these energy fields, and the pyramid, in a funnel-like shape, harnesses this fluid-like energy. When I say fluid-like, I mean that the energy exists outside of our own space and time, outside of our own normal three-dimensional space. But where it exists, it behaves like a fluid. It has fluid-like properties. It ripples. That's why Kozarev discovered that all you have to do is move your head, and he'll get a noticeable change on his torsion field detecting device. So, if you throw a ball through the air and it hits the wall, you're generating a torsion field. There's a ripple in the ether that ripples out just like you dropped a stone into a pond and ripples through space. So when you put a virus-fighting compound inside a pyramid and then you give it to somebody, or to a laboratory animal, what happens is that that virus-fighting compound has a higher energy charge, which, just like if you're willing to feel love instead of hatred, can unwind your DNA, right? Because we know that the DNA unwinds when you feel love and knots up in a tight braid when you feel hatred. So when you feel a sudden hatred, a sudden contraction, a sudden anger, as we learned from disc one, your cells could be 300 miles away and they're going to show a sudden spike on the lie detector graph. Now lastly, before this CD ends and we go on to the third one, what I'm going to tell you is that they also discovered that water could be purified underneath the pyramid or inside the pyramid. Agricultural seeds would show anywhere between a 20 to 100% increase in the amount of yield that they had. We already talked about the fact that oil would come out in a higher degree of efficiency. 30% more oil would come out. Radioactivity would decrease in the pyramid much faster than normally expected. And even more interestingly, now check this out. Teams from the Russian National Academy of Sciences found that by comparing earthquake data from the areas surrounding the pyramids to earlier data from a time before the pyramids were built, they discovered that instead of seeing one large and powerful quake, they saw several hundred tiny earthquakes instead. It appears that the pyramids have the ability to dissipate the energetic buildup and friction in the earth that normally creates sudden violent earthquakes. The atmosphere surrounding the pyramid appeared to be shielded from severe weather as well, causing an overall decrease in the amount of violent weather patterns which were deflected around the area the pyramid would be located. And here's the last study, which is perhaps my most favorite one of all. A quantity of salt and pepper was stored inside the pyramid by these teams, the Russian National Academy of Sciences. They took the salt and pepper out later on and then fed it to about 5,000 people in different selected jails in Russia. Now think about this. The only difference in any of these jails was that they had covertly changed the salt and pepper from normal salt and pepper to salt and pepper that had been stored inside the pyramid. Amazingly, within a few months, there was a dramatic improvement in the behavior of the prisoners. Most of the criminal behavior was almost completely eliminated, whereas the jails where they didn't get the pyramid salt and pepper showed no signs of change. Nothing in these jails under study changed except that the salt and pepper was being secretly added to the food. So we're starting to get to see here something interesting. There's effects on consciousness, there's effects on health, and there's also effects on earth changes, earthquakes, and weather patterns. The weather is changing, the earthquakes decrease, the ozone holes get purified. All these things happen from the energy harnessed by the pyramid. And whether you have 7,000 people meditating in the same room, or whether you take salt and pepper from the pyramid and feed it to people, the effect is the same. A change in human consciousness. When we move into disc three, which we're about to do, we're going to finally bring this all together and complete our investigation. And we're going to talk about how this equates to a change that's happening throughout the whole solar system, which is going to uplift humanity. So I'll see you then.